Blog Talk Radio.
Life seems to crush your dreams, so find your balance for all your needs. A little work, some family fun. Find your love, keep your life on the run. Told you how the story goes, so write your own script before you grow old. Live your life, laugh out loud. Own who you are, stand up proud. You gotta find what works for you. Find a balance that lets you be you.
Good evening and welcome to the Star Chamber Show live podcast, episode number 299, just one away from the 300 milestone, and this is Stephen Zimmer with you on a nice, balmy, mild night in Lexington, Kentucky. And tonight, I will be joined by just one co-host tonight, kind of a game time situation. And of course, that is the wonderful, the one and only, the man behind the Dark Style hashtag, Daniel Dark. Daniel, it's you and me tonight, bud. Are you ready?
It's us and a, you know, fabulous guest. So we will
yes, we
make
got a fabulous
a
guest.
Happen.
We are going to make a show happen. We're going to do that, indeed. And, yeah, unfortunately, Holly had a passing in the family of her great aunt. And so today she had to go to Indiana because they got visitations and funerals and stuff over the next 2 days. And so, unfortunately, yeah, we have a chaotic week again on our home front. But I'm anchoring the base and, of course, got the battle cats with me. So I think we should be okay on my end. And, of course, Daniel, you know, he's a bedrock of consistency. So yeah, we're going to do our best tonight for you. And yeah, like I said, like Daniel said, we got a great guest and really looking forward to talking with our guest here just shortly. And then we have in chat room is already building up. It is open, folks, and working. We have Tommy B. Smith and Sandy Lender already in hanging out in the chat room early. So join us there and give us some banter and questions for our guests as we get underway. And the chat room is quirky tonight, says Tommy B. Smith. Yeah, that's kind of like that. That's kind of like our kind of constant thing here at the show. If you do have trouble getting in, just keep on kind of refreshing and logging in again. Sometimes it does take a couple attempts to actually get into the chat room. It does get quirky. I don't know why I reported that more than once to them, but it does happen. But how have you been, Daniel? Tell me what's been going on. I hope, yeah, we just got out of some nasty snowfalls, and hopefully it got a little milder and you're able to get out there and sell some cigars. Did you get the trolley going again this past week?
Well, you know, I've been doing the trolley almost every day anyway. So, but yeah, last week, I guess it was, had a business meeting and everything that I was hosting down in Nashville at the Arpaland Hotel, and went in and no sign of snow or anything like that. Was there for about an hour and a half, maybe, you know, a little less than 2 hours, and came back out, and there was about 2 inches on the ground at that time. By the time I got in my car and got out on the interstate, it took me 4 hours to drive a 1 hour trip home.
Wow. That's not fun. Oh God. Yeah. Especially not easy to maneuver that thing. Cause it's a big, big a trolley car and you have to tow it.
And then the problem, I was in my car, you know, I drove down there in my car, so I wasn't in the trolley, but,
oh, okay. Gotcha.
There was a guy in a truck driver that was out with a plastic, one of the big plastic pallets, trying to scrape the interstate so he could get enough traction to get around this one curve on the interstate because there was already ice and everything all over everybody. So, and, you know,
wow,
that had come up right behind a 9-inch snow, you know, it went 9-inch, you know, 70 degrees, 9 inches of snow, you know, about 50 degrees, and then about another 6 inches of snow came in, you know, a few days later. So,
wow.
Welcome to, you know, the winter in Tennessee, and we've already had, in between those two snows, we've had like 6 times the amount of snow that we normally get here in a year. And the winter's just now starting. So, so much for global warming. So.
Oh, it's been a harsh winter in a lot of spots so far, and looks like we're actually going to get more this weekend. So yeah, I'm definitely bunkered in, and I do have plenty of canned refried beans if all goes to, you know, heck on power. So yeah, we're ready. but oh man, it's crazy. But we'll hang in there though. Don't worry. The work go on.
I've got a propane, you know, cooktop. I've got, you know, generators to run, you know, like the heat and everything in the trolley and stuff like that. You know, I've got different things like that. So, you know, if it came down to it and we lost all the power this time because they don't know whether it's going to rain and snow, rain and ice, rain, do all snow, they don't have a clue what's going to happen here this weekend.
Yeah.
Because we're right on that verge of when that front comes through and what the temperature is when it comes through.
Well, that's always a joy. Yeah. Yeah. Kentucky though. Yeah. We get weather changes on every 15 minutes. So it's crazy. So I'm used to them not ever being accurate completely about, you know, what's coming in, but you know, it's the good thing is that
in Kentucky, y'all have basically the same thing that we do. If you don't like the weather here, just wait 15 minutes. It'll change for you.
Yeah, that's it. Now, that's about explains it right. But good news is, you know, I do work home office stuff, and, you know, I do have a lot of work. It's a mountain right now, but at least I don't have to go anywhere crazy to do my thing, which is good. But speaking of, yeah, a lot of stuff coming up. Friday, there's going to be a major announcement for Imaginarium. We have the biggest guest of honor that we have ever had in our 9-year history that will be announced on Friday. Massive announcement. We also have a very big new Imaginator guest. And then we're going to announce a slew of guests, panelists, and spotlighted guests. So it's going to be a big weekend for Imaginarium announcements. And so that's brewing. Also on the press front in my press duties, you know, I got sick as could be throughout December. So, yeah, unfortunately, we had our wave two delayed a bit, but now that is getting out now. And that will include, and we announced it yesterday, Stephen Shrewsbury's new novel, Killer of Giants. He's writes in the Robert E. Howard style of sword and sorcery. Great stuff. The cover is gorgeous. Illustrated cover by two brothers from Venezuela, the Rodriguez brothers. The really great, great artwork. Debuted that yesterday.
That mammoth is epic.
Yeah. Yeah, and the giant, you can count the fingers. There are 6. It's a Nephilim giant, yes, because he does bring in Nephilim lore. It's antediluvian age, pre-flood age, and got Nephilim running around and incarnate demon fallen angels and cool stuff.
Yeah,
I served as editor on this novel.
The blowing cloth is epic. You know, it's just
yeah. I served as editor, and it's a dynamite book. I mean, if you're into sword and sorcery and fantasy, it's a must-have. I mean, it's a superb book. And so that's coming in. And then Carol Preflatish's next Nathan Perry mystery is going to be coming out, and we are very close to finalizing some cover art with that. So there's going to be a cover reveal very soon once Carol signs off on that. The next probably few days we're going to get that finished up. And then we also have releases coming from several other authors, from Aaron Drown, Hey, Christopher Drown. Actually, I've got a new one, a new Ragnar Stormbringer novella. We've got a couple children's books, Brittany Cummings and Dr. Vic. Got some print releases coming from John Pica. We've got, I mean, there's just a lot. So right now it's like catch up because I got so darn sick over the holidays and just couldn't do anything. You know, I just could not, you know, tackle all the stuff that was happening when I was that sick. But yeah, so it's this week is, I've been feeling a little bit better. I'm not completely back from this lengthy thing I've had, this upper respiratory illness, but has gotten better. So yeah, I'm working as much as I physically can push myself, but it's going. So lot of activity, but I'll keep at it. But we better better recognize.
What do you think coming out with Big Dad? What do you have
out
with John?
We are going to release a kind of like almost like a chapbook of his Knight Reich book, and then we are going to have the second book come out as well. And so, yeah, we are going to be adding in print editions of those. Originally, plan was to do ebook only, but we are going to go ahead and do some print stuff with that. And so that's going to be awesome. And so, yeah, there's just, yeah, it's right now, I mean, throughout January, I mean, I'm going to be pretty much just crushed in between that and the convention and my editing work. And then of course, writing, I always, you know, have a writing session in the morning and should have some cool news by next Wednesday on that, which by the way is our 300th show anniversary. So that's going to be awesome. Can't wait for that. It's our 300th episode. So we'll have to do something really exciting, you know, like, you know, we'll raffle off a vacation to visit Tommy V. Smith or something. You know, you'll have to pay for it if you win. But yeah, we'll offer some great prize like that. Well, of course, we spare no expenses, you all know. But, oh, man, before I get too carried away with my crazy humor, we better acknowledge our awesome sponsors. And we have two tonight, Sandy Lender and Per Bostet Publications. So I'm going to go ahead and take care of Per Bostet first tonight, and then we will give you the new Sandy Lender spot, which you definitely want to listen to because, again, I can speak with authority on this because I have read it thoroughly, and the book advertised in Sandy's ad is fantastic, and it's perfect for February. So listen to it closely. But here's a bit about Per Bostet. Per Bostet Publications is a small press based in the Louisville metro area, specializing in speculative fiction and other outside-the-box books. With over 30 titles in print and ebook formats and a handful of audiobooks, Per Bostet offers a little bit of everything. Explore post-World War II England with 11-year-old Sylvie and Edelweiss for Elizabeth, the sequel to Andrea Gilbey's Bottle Tops for Battleships. Or dive into the thrilling world of Karma and Crime, a new supernatural mystery by J. Paul Burroughs. You can find these titles and more at perbostetpublications.com, at Amazon, or you can find the press in person at regional events. Per Bostet Publications, where timeless tales unfold. So big thank you to T. Lee, Marion, and Sarah Marion, and yeah, great bunch, and just fantastic people. And yes, they will also be at Imaginarium as well. So, but here's the Sandy Lender spot. Listen to this, get this book, because you don't want to go through Valentine's without this to read. Check it out.
Do vampires celebrate the same holidays as us? Author Sandy Lender says, of course they do, and up next is Valentine's Day. Welcome back to the Rose Chateau, where a nefarious businessman is threatening our favorite vampire and his fairy love interest. Get your copy of Sandy's new release, My Fairy Valentine, in print or ebook formats. You'll be guaranteed a humorful blend of sweet paranormal romance sprinkled with a touch of horror in Sandy Lender's latest novel, My Fairy Valentine.
Thank you, Sandy Lender, the genre blender. And also check out her YouTube channel because she has some new posts up there. She had a new unboxing video that she just posted up on her YouTube channel. So, yes, back to you, Daniel. Our guest should be calling in here any minute now. But yes, we are getting ready to rock and roll.
I've got something that I want to put out there, and hopefully you
go for it.
Will agree to it. I haven't talked to you about it yet. I'd like to put out a challenge to authors out there that want to go into print, but they do not have an editor yet. If you have a book that is in, that you've sort of outlined, but you haven't started writing yet, go head and head to head against me on writing your book. And if you get yours done before me, we will send them in to my editor, or send it into my editor to see about having it read through and see what may need to be changed in and stuff for you.
Ha ha! And you have a pretty good editor too. I might say so myself. So yeah, that's it. That's cool. Cool. Look at that. A breaking news on the Star Chamber show, authors. Yeah, so listen up. I know you're all out there. Yeah, because every week we have one of our biggest shows ever with the Pete Catania show, which is ironic because it turned out that Tommy B. Smith was in Wichita, Kansas on New Year's weekend. And, of course, Pete's new novel, Why Not Wichita, was one of the big focuses of our show. And I just read the novella myself and loved it. So, yeah, that's so, yes, I know you're all out there, folks, even if you're not in the chat room. We are aware of the viewers.
Tomorrow. We'll start it tomorrow, since Stephen is not objectionable to it. So
I'm not object. No, I'm not objectionable to it. Yeah. Well, you know, this editor that you speak of, yeah, you'll have to catch her up on the whole plan though, probably around Friday. Cause yeah, she's going to be kind of out of commission for about the next day and a half, but yes, definitely. Yeah. Definitely game for that. So we are going to see what happens here. So, yes, we're just waiting on the call-in from our guest at the moment. So, yeah, that's cool. That's cool,
and,
Daniel.
And I think every week we need to put in, you know, the chat and everything, where you're at in your book. How far along are you? So that you know, people know whether they've got to catch up to you or whether they've got to, you know, to just write faster.
Right. Well, guess what? I just saw the 502 area code come in here, and I know that is from the Louisville area, which means that our guest is in the waiting slot here, Daniel. So I'm going to go ahead and introduce our guest and bring her onto the show. And yes, I mentioned that she is from the Louisville area. And tonight we have a very special show for you because we are bringing you a debut author who just released her first novel on New Year's Day. And I can speak as I have read this novel. It's absolutely fantastic, YA science fiction. And this is a very talented writer you definitely want to watch out for in 2022. And so I am proud and honored to bring onto the show for the very first time the one, the only, M.S. Nolan. Megan, you are on the show. Your microphone is on. You should be live.
Thank you, Stephen, so much for having me, and you and Holly and Daniel as well.
There you are. Good to hear you. Yeah, we're excited.
Good to hear
tonight.
You
too. You just get Daniel and myself, unfortunately, because Holly had a passing in the family and had to go to Indiana for a visitation and funeral on short notice. So
I'm so sorry to hear that.
But she definitely wanted me to tell you that she absolutely is going to be catching up on the show, and she really hated having to miss this particular show because she really was hoping to get a chance to talk with you. I know you dealt with her maybe a little bit because you attended Imaginarium last year, and we'll definitely cover your experience because that was awesome, involves the one and only Michael Nost. But first and foremost, you just had your first novel come out on New Year's Day. So tell us a little bit about what the Temporal Protection Agency, book one of your new series, is all about.
All right. So the Temporal Protection Agency, TPA for short, the novel is set in 2322,
which is 300 years into our future. The Earth is at peace. We managed to have world peace, which is fantastic. And Earth is a member of the Peaceful Coalition of Planets. And just in a nutshell, there's a malevolent alien force attacking Earth, and my characters have to defend it.
Yes, okay. And it is dynamite. I mean, just to fully disclose, I served as your editor on the project, so I do know this book pretty well.
And he was fantastic editor.
Well, thank you. But it's one to immerse into, and it definitely, as I read it, I was like, this is a compelling, YA science fiction novel. It's very character driven. It has a great balance of, action and really good, excellent dialogue. I mean, you really have honed your craft. I mean, and we're going to get a little bit in your path in our discussion tonight. But you have an amazing protagonist in this, Danny, who is very easy to connect with as a reader. And I wanted to ask you a little bit about, how Danny manifested to you as a character. Was it after you got the plot going, or did the plot kind of develop after you conceived of Danny's character? And how was the, what's the evolution of your Danny character? Because she is just first rate. I mean, great character.
Oh, thank you. So I have to think about it. I came up with her first. I wanted somebody who was kind of the opposite of me in a way. She's very cunning and ambitious, and she goes after what she wants. She doesn't matter what gets in the way. She's just going to go after her goals. And I'm not really completely like that. It's really funny because when I started writing it, I had people give me feedback, she's too unlikable. So I sort of toned that back a little bit. I didn't want to make her a Mary Sue character where she's great at everything. And so I kind of went the other way. But I started fine tuning her character, and with some help along the way, I brought her up to where she is today in the book. And it's like the characters, they just talk to you in a way. And she told me how she wanted to be written, and I took dictation.
Yeah, that sounds a lot kind of like the way I describe when I write. It's like I'm watching a movie and transcribing it. I kind of get in this, what I call the zone. It's almost like a half trance. That's why Holly will tell you, like, sometimes that she's had to come get me during writing. I act like I'm just shocked and startled when she gets my attention. It's because I really am in a zone. And so, yeah, I know how that is when you describe having a character dictate to you. And it's a really interesting process. Last week we had a guest, Pete Catania, who was took on the challenge of writing a novella with a character that didn't have a defined character arc. He was talking about characters like Indiana Jones and so forth that really don't have arcs. They just are. And it was a really interesting approach to that. Now, you, on the other hand, have some characters that really do have some very compelling arcs. And Danny is just one of a trio of younger folks in this novel, along with Deep and Steven, which I think is a fantastic name for a character, by the way.
And it's spelled the same way,
yes.
Too.
Yes, you spelled Stephen correctly with the PH. That is the correct spelling for Stephen. Ha ha. Take that, Stephen Shrewsbury, if you're listening. Shrews, he's great. We just talked about his new cover art release. But yes, Deep and Stephen and Danny, I mean, they are part of the cat. And at the beginning, they're coming together, and I'm not going to give away any spoilers, but there are certain dynamics at the beginning that kind of change over the course of the novel. And I think this novel shows the show's a really good character arc type scenario with characters. I mean, really shows what kind of strides you can make and how these characters are kind of coming of age and really progressing. And I'd like to ask you about Deep and Steven. I know, Danny, of course, is the main protagonist, but they end up being just great secondary characters. And we did almost a whole show on secondary characters. So, yeah, I'm going to ask you about those two. What was kind of your inspiration for bringing together them and then combining them into the team? Because it really is a great chemistry.
Well, I wanted to come up with two possible romantic interests for her. You know, she's not interested in dating, but they're very interested in her while also still remaining professional in the military. So Deep is just, he's just the sweetest guy. He's, very intelligent, obviously, finishing military school and driven, but he works in the Temporal Protection Agency, save the world and all that. He just wants to find a girl that, he loves and settle down and be a stay-at-home dad. Like, that's him. And Steven is kind of the opposite. He comes from a colony. He didn't grow up on Earth. That's kind of farther away. And he has sort of a secret, which I won't spoil anybody, that he has to deal with and carry around. And then when he gets to Earth and joins the United Earth Space Program, which is where the military academy, he is what I like to call a serial dater. He loves, talking with women, getting to know them, but he doesn't want to settle down. But he's also very interested in Danny. And it's a fun trio. And as the novel goes along, they become friends. And it's really neat to see how the characters evolves along with their captain, Philip, who's leading the team.
Yeah, and that's actually what – great segue. You made my job easy here. I was going to say the next character I was going to bring up was Philip because, you do have the presence of a very a potent mentor-type character in this that has known Danny for a while and is the kind of like the the veteran on the team, to use a word. But, yeah, Philip is also, a great character and fills that kind of mentor function. And you see a lot of characters like that in some YA novels. But, as far as they fill that mentor-type role. What makes what do you think makes Philip unique as a mentor character?
I think his last experience before he's leading my characters on their mission, it was his first time as a captain, and he lost a crew member under his watch, and it was someone he was close to, and it really threw him for a while. He stepped down out of the TPA and taught a class and had Danny, Deep, and Steven in his class, so we sort of got to know them before they were assigned on the mission together. But he's got a little bit of a wound that he's carrying, but he has to put that aside and put his worries aside and captain this group of young green cadets, and I have a lot of respect for him. He's a great leader. It may not be like what he's called to do necessarily, but he's put in that role and he's going to do the best that he can to take care of the people under his command.
Definitely. And another character that you bond with. Like I said, you've got a really good ensemble. It's a really good book for demonstrating secondary characters and very good arcs. But Daniel, I didn't mean to hog all the questions, but we're on the topic of characters and character development. Is there anything you wanted to throw in there?
In your secondary characters that you've got, who is your favorite secondary character? Would that be Danny or?
My favorite secondary character. I mean, it's like trying to pick between your kids. It's really hard. But I really like Steven. He just has this rich background that, as you read along, it gets slowly revealed a little bit more. And then into book two and book three, eventually you'll find out even more about his background. And just from what he had to deal with growing up, I feel for the guy. And there's more to him than what people see on the surface. So he's been fantastic to write. I really like him a lot.
Do you foresee him getting his own book at some time in the future?
I mean, I'm open to anything at this point. I think it would be kind of cool to go back and write a prequel. I talk about my teens, their parents founded the Temporal Protection Agency 25 years previously, and I thought it'd be cool to do a prequel or, you know, continue the series if it really takes off after I finish the trilogy.
Okay.
Yeah, I'd say about 10 years we're going to come back and Megan's going to have like 36 titles with prequel, standalones. Multiple series is all set in the same universe. But we've got a good question from the chat room for you already. This comes from the genre blender, Sandy Lender. And she asks,
okay.
Sounds like there's a huge military force or military presence on Earth, but Earth is at peace. Does the book say how long Earth has been at peace? Is it fairly recent, or is the military presence built up because we are worried about alien invasion, and then that's what actually happens? I guess what I'm asking is if the military foundation is a leftover holdover from a horrible past, or is it because we're building up to prepare for some future threat invasion?
It's in the book. I think that Earth's been at peace. I think it's like 235 years or something. The world peace, I believe it's 2076. And then a group of peaceful aliens comes to Earth. And this is kind of background information. The story doesn't really go into this too much, but I think it's kind of neat to mention. They've been watching us. And after we've had world peace for 10 years, they decide to come here and they bring their technology and medical advancement. And so they, you know, we don't have too many deadly diseases anymore. We've cured world hunger. It's a very much of a similar to like a Star Trek future. And unfortunately, after Earth joins this group of aliens, they belong to the Coalition of Planets, about 50 peaceful planets that have joined together. And then after Earth is admitted, a part of that responsibility of belonging to the Coalition of Planets is that they do have some enemies that, you know, will go after the members. So Earth does have to prepare to fight these aliens. I call them gorillas, not like the monkey gorillas, but like gorillas in guerrilla warfare. And so that they are gearing up for that. Does that answer your question?
Yeah, that's awesome. And great answer, too. But, yeah, because I know Sandy loves science fiction. So, yeah, you're definitely probably selling
great.
Her on your book. But, yeah, we like to take pride that this show increases sales for everybody. But you do have I did love you do have a cameo mention of Elon Musk in it. He's part of the history of Earth and some cool stuff like that. And that is my way of kind of getting a segue into the science of this book. And I was kind of curious about the your interest in the science, the research that you may have done for this novel, and because in it you have some advanced technology and you also have concepts of time travel, wormholes, and other things that are definitely in the realm of, you know, kind of cutting edge physics and so forth. So, yeah, what about the scientific aspect of this? Is this something that you are you really into the science of it, or did you have to do a lot of research for it, or talk a little bit about the science aspect of it?
Yeah, so it's soft sci-fi. I didn't do too much in-depth research. I love the concept of wormholes, and in my story, I call them temporal bridges, which they've always been there, which is different from a wormhole that the aliens use. They use their ships to just make one anywhere they want to go, and that's kind of irresponsible. So my organization, they just use the wormhole temporal bridges that already exist. But if it was in Star Wars or Star Trek, I'll see what it is in that universe and then sort of put my own spin on it.
Very cool. Very cool. And that's wormholes are how Daniel transports himself back and forth from the Victorian era to now. So he knows all about that.
All right.
Don't you, Daniel? That's how you do it.
Be quiet, Stephen.
Okay. I won't divulge all your secrets. But, yeah. Gee.
Now, one thing that I heard that I would really like to find out a little bit more about is that you got started in fan fiction, and how that may have helped you become a writer and a better writer.
Yeah, so I'm going to reveal something just a little embarrassing. My very first story that I wrote, it was Pirates of the Caribbean. It was a Mary Sue author insert. but the plot was good enough, and people would give me feedback, you know, your next story, don't write yourself into the story. So, you know, the next one, I just wrote about the canon characters. But I want any young writer to know, like, it's okay if you start there. You know, you try to move on in the next story. But, I wouldn't have gotten to where I am today, a published author, if I hadn't started with that Mary Sue author insert. So that was in 2004. And then I kept writing fan fiction. Pirates of the Caribbean movie came out in 2007, and I had just finished up a story, and I thought I'd start a new one. And it was interesting because at the end of the movie, one of the characters was seeking immortality. And then I thought it would be cool, well, what if I had the character and they were cursed with immortality instead of trying to seek it? What if I tried to have them get it removed? Because if you're immortal, all of your parents and your friends, they're going to die, and then you're going to be stuck here. And I think that sounds like hell on earth. So anyway, that story was really well received. I think it was partly due to timing and then partly due to people liking the plot. So not to brag on myself, but I became known as what is a BNF, big name fan in that community. And just receiving the reviews and comments and positive feedback, it really gave me some confidence. And then I wrote fan fiction for other fandoms as well. So that started with the historical. I saw the Star Trek reboot movie in 2009. I was like, oh, I got to write for this. So that was my first foray into sci-fi. I also really liked the TV show Merlin, BBC, so that was more of a fantasy I would write for that. And I also really loved fan fiction, writing for Harry Potter as well. And after all that, I finally had the confidence to say, okay, I'm going to write an original work, and I'm going to get it published, and we're going to see what happens.
Well, that's awesome.
Okay.
That is awesome.
You said it's on. Is any of that online to read now, or?
It is online, but it's on different accounts, so good luck trying to find me.
Yeah, she's
picking
us. No,
it's been interesting because I want to keep that part of my life sort of like separate from my professional life,
right.
But it's starting mm-hmm. to blend over, and I'm trying to, you know, control that as much as I can. But I do have some Tumblr followers. I have a Harry Potter blog, and so I'm trying to hopefully get them to come read my original stuff. So I want to give a shout out to them, my Tumblr followers and online friends, for supporting my writing for so long.
Now, one thing
exactly.
I did tell
you, you want to keep it, you know, going with the people that got you there.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah, one of the things that I've always said about fan fiction for a lot of writers, it provides a kind of a safe environment to kind of immerse into honing your craft. And, you know, because you have a pre-established world and settings and, you know, to an extent, a storyline that you can dive into and work. But, you know, you write your own stories within that world. And in that sense, it's like a, you know, kind of shared world fiction, you know, which is, you know, done in, you know, the publishing world too. Did fan fiction give you that kind of comfort zone to develop your craft, or what, or is that what kind of drew you to write so extensively in that phase? Or, were you, you know, kind of just doing it just from the motivation of being a fan?
It was both. It definitely did give me that confidence. Let me see. Can you say that question again?
just, you know, coming from the extent of like fan fiction, did you see it as a kind of like a more comfortable zone to develop your craft in? Or were you just strictly coming from just, I just want to write some stories in this fandom?
No, it did. And so it was interesting because I didn't have to world build for my fan fiction. And I think, world building is hard. And I started from scratch.
Yeah.
Some people will turn their fan fiction into an original story, and, like, that's fine. It, you know, there have been some successes with that, but I didn't want to do that. It just didn't seem to fit. So I did start from scratch for writing Temporal Protection Agency. Of course, I had lots of inspiration from Star Wars, Star Trek. I really loved The X-Files. Did you ever watch that show back in the 90s?
Yeah,
a bit. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So that was a influence a little bit. It did give me a lot of confidence to sort of branch out into my own thing.
Very cool. Yeah, that's what I think fan fiction is can be very helpful to writers that are, you know, kind of wanting to hone their craft and really get to the point where they're ready to do original stories. And I think your story illustrates that really well, because I think it gave you the environment to get comfortable, to hone your craft, get your chops down to where you felt, you know, like you could take a stab at writing something like you have, and obviously you've done it extremely well. So kudos to you on that.
Thank you.
When did you realize what factors did you see in your writing that made you see that, okay, now I'm ready. Now I'm ready to take on an original world, original story, and take that next step toward becoming a published author? What did you see in your writing at that juncture that kind of helped you make that transition?
Oh, that's a really good question. I think I just had a couple reviews. Like, somebody said, you know, your story set after, you know, such and such movie, like this is what should have happened. Like, this is better than the movie, you know, you need to be, you need to be writing your own stuff. You're that good. And it just made me think, like, this is really true? Is it because I love writing fan fiction, but everybody like just gives like nice comments like, oh, great job. And I'm like, okay, what about, you know, constructive criticism? Oh, you did such a great job. And it's like, okay.
Right.
But, yeah. So just getting a couple of those comments, it just really stuck with me. And I'm like, you know what? I gotta give this a shot. I mean, maybe I really got something that I can share with the world and broaden my audience from just, you know, people online that don't know who I really am to people that I can just broaden my audience and share my original stories with.
Definitely, definitely. And, well, I mean, and you mentioned that, you know, you get, you know, the fan reaction, you know, oh, it's really, you know, great, I really like this, but you don't get the necessarily the constructive feedback. Did you employ, and it's something actually I'm kind of interested in, did you, when you wrote your novel, did you employ some beta readers during the process to give you the more constructive kind of feedback? And how'd you go about that or not?
I've had different beta readers in the past, but I have one. She reads all of my Harry Potter stories, and I don't know if I don't want to mention like her real name. Her online name is, it's Lit Setar. I'm not really sure how to, but she knows who she is. We're best friends, and we talk every day on Tumblr, and she reads my stories, and she gets back to me quickly and gives me great feedback, and we've just bonded over that. And I haven't had that my entire time I was writing fanfic, but for the past, you know, 4 years or so, we've just had this really great professional relationship, but also we're just best friends, and it's like you're working with your friend, and it doesn't even seem like work. So yeah, she's fantastic. It's awesome.
Oh, that's awesome. Yeah. It's great when you have a friend like that. And yes, very helpful in the process when you can find a constructive, you know about that, Daniel, because I know one of your beta readers. So it's helpful when you're in process.
And,
he's quiet.
You know, that is one of the things that if you do not have a beta reader, you will not see a lot of your mistakes.
Yeah, it's
that beta
really
reader
important.
Will catch mistakes, even though they're not an editor or anything like that, maybe, but they will catch mistakes or see something a little bit different and give you a, if they're giving you true criticism, creative criticism, you know, then you get a chance to make your writing that much better.
Absolutely.
Where if you don't have that person that you trust and everything to give you that creative criticism, you know, you're going to make a lot of mistakes in it and take a whole lot longer to put out a good piece of work than what you may have done if you'd had that.
Definitely.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. And yeah, it's kind of weird. Yeah, when you're writing, how there's things you just don't see, and your beta readers, your editor will point things out to you, and you'll look at them in shock, like, how did I not see that, or how did this get past me, or how did I omit this? And it's I mean, I don't care how many books you've written, it's, you're always going to kind of be in that kind of state. It's always going to happen like that. But it's a perspective thing. I mean, cause you're in the center of it and you're creating it, and the folks that are beta readers or editors are looking at it from a, you know, from outside, and they see what you do not see. So yeah, it's something that, yeah, is absolutely necessary in the process. Yeah, writing's not as solitary as you may think it is. Yeah, it does involve a few people.
In my first book, Stephen, you know, like on the second page of the book, I had spelled the word correctly, but I had used the wrong word. You know, and
mm-hmm.
your word processing and everything doesn't pick that up as the word spelt correctly.
Nope, not even Grammarly. Nope, know all about
that. I don't know how many times, and never noticed that I had put the wrong word in there until my editor sits there and goes, "This is what this word's supposed to be," and I said, and I looked at it, and I'm like, "You're a big dumb."
No, you know, you should never beat yourself up too much. You know, when you're in the midst of it and you're immersed in something, I mean, it's weird how the brain works. And I don't know, and Megan, you might be able to relate to this, but sometimes your brain fills things like a word in that you and your mind see and you think it's there, but you don't actually type it into the manuscript. Sometimes it's almost like fills in a gap. It happens, and I see this with everybody I work with as an editor. It happens pretty much, but your brain fills in gaps automatically, and not when you necessarily put it in the actual manuscript. You know what I'm talking about?
like that one that I'm talking about. The word was seal. Like in a windowsill, I had put in S-E-A-L.
That's awesome.
As in the
I know what you're
mammal.
Talking about. Everybody needs a windowsill. You need a big barking seal at your window to make the neighborhood very excited. No, I know what you're talking about. That is Daniel's favorite pigeon scene in Knife's Tale.
Yeah.
If you're wondering, readers, the famous pigeon scene. And Megan's going, "Oh, my God, I've got to read that now." But, yes, Daniel's world is definitely unique. He is the incarnation of Jack the Ripper, but he spares us and lets us continue with our lives, which is good.
What do you mean incarnation?
Yes, the incarnation. Yes. Oh, the embodiment. Yeah, but oh man. But yeah, I remember that very well. Yeah, it's window seal. That was awesome. Everybody needs it.
You know, as a writer, I had read that page over and over and over again. I had read it in readings to public, and never seen that word was wrong. And, and all of a sudden, when it was pointed out to me, I was just like, how dumb am I right now? Because you sit there and you think about it, you're like, yeah, that's right. I'm a big dummy. Just tell me that. But there, that's just one small example of how easy it is as a author to be in that zone that y'all are talking about and know what you meant to say. But if you've got, like with seal, first letter of the word and the last letter of the word is the same thing. And both of them are four letter words. Your mind fills in the other letters there. Whether you, mm-hmm. Whether you mean to or not.
Yep.
I have an example that Stephen caught from my writing. I wonder if you remember this. So there's a word I invented for people that don't like telepaths, and I do have some telepaths in my story, called telephobe with a B. And I got a chapter back from Stephen, and he said, "You wrote telephone. Did you mean telephobe?" Do you remember that?
Yep. That is a perfect example. Yeah, your brain filled in. You thought you were writing the right word, but your brain just kind of clicked over and filled in the more common term. Yeah, exactly how that happens. Good example, Megan.
Those are easy things to do. That's very easy to do, and it's very common to do. That's the reason that you have beta readers. That's the reason you have editors and, content editors and different things like that, because we do not see our own mistakes a lot of times. And, you writing your first book and getting it out there you just put your baby out there for the public to see. You know, you don't want it to be the ugly baby, do you?
I do not.
Yeah, no. No, it's a, yeah, you can, like I said, you can polish up a manuscript and get it to be very clean copy, but never edit your own work in the final stage. I mean, you really do need another set of eyes to come in, because there are those things where your brain just kind of, you know, what you see, you don't see it. You just don't see it. And, yeah, you do need somebody. And some of the automated stuff like Grammarly just doesn't catch a lot of those things, a lot of nuance, a lot of variants like that, like we've been talking about. I mean, it's definitely, yeah, it's definitely a necessity to have beta readers and editors. And I can't say that enough, especially for authors that are self-publishing, because some of them think they can just get away with self-editing entirely. And that's when you make some mistakes. So,
well, like
I mean, I'll just pass over. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
It's like me where I write a lot of mine's historical fiction in a way. And, you know, some of the words that I use, because they were used back then, the Grammarly and those type of things are like, that's spelt wrong, or that, you know, is this, that's this. And you have, you know, then I'm like, no, that's spelt correctly and it's used correctly in this sentence. You're just using the modern day version of it instead of, you know, the 1800s. And yours as a futuristic writing, you might have a word in there that a few hundred years from now would mean something different than what it means today.
Absolutely.
And it'll sit there and tell you that, you know, this is incorrect. No, it's correct. Just keep on going. So have you made up your own, like, dictionary on some of the words that you might be using that are not used that way today?
I didn't do too much of that. A lot of times, like, I'll mention something that we have today, you know, this, oh, the ancient technology of, you know, such and such. And then I did invent some new words when my characters go back in time to a dystopian planet. I got to invent some words for that. There is a bit of an Earth influence, but I don't want to say too much about that because it will spoil the story. But yeah, that was a lot of fun inventing words.
I think a good book for you to read is one that I got not too long ago. Do I have it out here with me so I can tell you the exact title? The Meaning of Life, LIFF. And it's done by Douglas Adams, if you've ever heard of him.
Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy.
Yeah. It's all the words that do not have, or all the things that do not have words, he created words for.
Oh, that sounds fantastic.
And that may, you know, be something that you could utilize in your futuristic writing.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And lexicons are always fun to have, especially as a series grows. You know, fans always love those, you know, the kind of like the guidebook with the lexicon with the, you know, various terms and characters and planets and people and stuff. And in your case, with the science fiction dimension to it. Yeah, you don't have to worry at least about physical maps like fantasy writers, but yeah, the lexicon might come in handy at some point. That's awesome.
Do you have it mapped out in the galaxy where your planets are that people are coming from and where the aliens are actually, what galaxy they're coming from?
I try to keep it a little bit ambiguous just so, you know, people could just use their imaginations. But I don't know, in the following books, I might be a little bit more specific. What do you think? Do you think it would be helpful to have something a little bit more concrete?
Just like any world building, which is what you're doing in that book, having a map of, you know, the galaxy may be, you know, something that you'd want to put in there and say, you know, this group of aliens that are coming to invade are coming from, you know, this galaxy that's so far away or something like that, that without the wormholes that they're able to create, they couldn't get here.
Okay.
You know, that type of stuff that, you know, just like, you know, Tolkien used in Lord of the Rings, where he, you know, created a map of the whole realm or the different realms that were there, so that you could, you know, as a reader and RPG-er and stuff like that, you could go back and look at all of it and see, you know, see where this campaign journeyed through.
Oh, yeah, those maps are beautiful. My husband and I just finished, rewatched the Hobbit movies, and the maps are just gorgeous. He was such a talented, just amazing writer.
What do you think, Stephen?
On which aspect?
On her creating a galaxy type of map for it, or?
Oh yeah, absolutely. As she gets into it, it's not something she, Megan, I don't think you should feel pressure on that now necessarily. But once you get a couple books in, like two or three, four books in, yeah, at that point, once you've built up a body of work, I think, yeah, getting some of that will be fun. I think that'll be a fun thing for you to do for the fans. But
okay,
That's not something you should feel pressure on immediately. But like on a website, you might track some of this stuff. But as far as doing a dedicated like book release, yeah, not for a little bit.
But it may be something that she just puts on her website. Or,
yeah, that's what I'm saying.
You know,
yeah.
She has a what is it? Follow me or something like that. You know, where they pay a little bit of money to do it, to see extra stuff that she is not putting out to the public.
Oh yeah, like a Patreon type site,
Patreon.
That.
Thank you.
Yeah, sure. Yeah. Yeah, and in today's models, yeah, that might be something she adds in at some point. Yeah, but yeah, Megan, that might be something to think about at some point. But yeah, definitely not something you have to feel. And right now, the main thing is just getting this on the ground and getting some reviews and getting some traction with it. But I have seen on some of your posts, it sounds like you've been making some sales, and I saw you with a few boxes of books and a picture of yours, so it sounds like you've been signing away.
Yeah, I mean, I went to the Louisville Writers Group on Monday, and I sold four books. They were able to help me give feedback when I was writing book one. And other than the Facebook, really word of mouth has helped me a lot. I have little business cards with, you know, my name, website, email on there saying, you know, on Amazon, it's in paperback and ebook. And just handing out those business cards seemed to work well also.
Well, I'm going to ask the people that are listening to actually go to Amazon, considering you've got it in ebook, download the ebook, and immediately after they download it, write you a review on read.
Oh,
the
that
first,
would be fantastic.
First 5 pages, and write a review on the book from the first 5 pages.
Yeah, reviews are so important. So yeah, if anybody has listening to the show tonight that has bought Megan's book, and yes, for a new author, reviews are critical and really help authors. They can use those review quotes, and it helps them get some traction. So, and it helps also if you get enough of them, it does affect the algorithm on sites like Amazon.
If you get over 25 in it,
get a bunch.
It helps the algorithm a lot.
Yeah, so please, yeah, write Megan a review if you bought her new book, and it only takes a few minutes. You'd only have to write a few sentences, nothing crazy.
How,
so,
how much is your e-book?
How much are the e-books?
Yes.
They're $5.95, and then if you do have Kindle Unlimited, it's free.
Okay. So you
Very
can get
nice.
A free, you, if you've got Kindle Unlimited, you can get a free ebook and then be able to write a short review. It doesn't have to be long, you know, just, you know, one sentence is good enough for a review. And that will help her out on her career path as a brand new author.
That'd be great. Thank you.
So I have to ask you, though, because I still remember it, even though it was back in 2009 when I experienced it, but for the Exodus Gate. But what was it like? Just walk us through a little bit. What was it like when you received your very first print copy? How did that play out? You know, to give us a little bit about how that was when you got it and opened the package or box. What was it like? And give us a little picture of that, because that's always a special moment.
Oh yeah, so I remember the Amazon guy brought the box in, and I opened it, and my husband had the phone out, and he was like, "Well, how do you feel?" And I'm like, I don't know what to feel. it was so overwhelming. I was excited, of course, but just to hold it in my hands and to see my name on there, it was so special. And then I also had the experience when all my author copies came in, and then I was at home by myself when I opened that one, and then I was like running around the house just excited and cheering, you know, all by myself. But that made it more real, because with the author's copy, like, I could go on Facebook or I can text people and be like, "Hey, this is here, it's ready, you know, just let me know if you're interested." And it's a dream come true. Ever since I was in elementary school, we watched a video. I think it was Jack Proletsky. And he went through his process as a writer, and I remember watching that video and thinking, that's what I want to do. And I'm 35 now, and I finally made that dream a reality. And so if you're not sure if you want to get started on writing, just give it a shot, and you never know what will happen.
Absolutely. Yeah, and definitely, I'm so happy for you.
Was there any
tears how that feels.
Involved in any of that? Did she hear
can
any
say that?
That
again?
Was there any tears involved in any of that reaction?
yeah, a little bit. I was just all over the place, emotional. Yeah, it was very, very satisfying and scary all at the same time.
Now that you've had almost 2 weeks of having the book out, how long do you think it'll be before you have the next book out?
Well, I was thinking about that, and I thought it'd be neat if I could have one out every year, either in time for Christmas or by January 1st. And so I've been outlining book two. I've already started on the first couple chapters, and I'm hoping Stephen will be interested in editing this next one. So stretch goal is at the end of the year. Yes. Okay. But yeah, stretch goal is the end of the year.
Yes. Well, before the end of the year.
She missed my calendar, didn't she?
Well, she may have been just getting herself ready to enter the Star Chamber at that point, so she might have missed the early part of the show. But Daniel, you can tell her your challenge.
my challenge.
Oh,
is,
I heard the challenge.
You heard the challenge.
Okay, she heard it.
You're
okay.
Not going to go for the challenge.
She's ready. She's on her way. Yeah, Megan is on the road now. It's going to be fun. And speaking of, yeah, I can't wait to see you at Imaginarium this summer. Get ready, because Friday we have our biggest guest of honor announcement in our 9-year history. Massive announcement, and you're definitely going to want to meet this guest. Definitely going to be awesome. But going back to 2021's Imaginarium, wanted to ask you about, because you were attending as an unpublished author at that time, and you got to work with a certain nationally renowned editor, author, Michael Nost, in an exclusive workshop. How was that? I've always wanted to kind of find. I'd never have actually found out from you how all that went and what that was like with you working with Michael. Go ahead, he's on the show.
Yeah.
He's often on the show, so yeah, we definitely people that listen to the show definitely are familiar with Michael. So go ahead and talk about that a little bit.
Well, he was super nice. So it ended up just being a really small workshop. There were more people signed up, but it was just me and another woman, and so. We just had this just back and forth conversation. We had each other's stories, and then, you know, we talked about, well, what makes a story great. And then we also talked about showing versus telling, and he gave us a sentence, and he said, you know, do you know if it's showing or telling? And we both got it wrong. And so he gave me a really good example. Growing up, I would listen with my dad to U of L sports radio, and I imagine you're a UK fan, right?
Oh, I like the U of L too. I do.
You
I
like
support
UofL
all
too.
All the colleges here. Yep, I support them all.
All right. Well, for showing. If you're listening to sports, like a radio show, say, you know, so-and-so dribbles down the court and, you know, shoots a three-pointer, scores, blah, blah, blah. And that's like the showing. That's the first sportscaster. And then the second one will kind of chime in and say, you know, so-and-so was in the hospital with a groin injury and blah, 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 blah. And that's the telling. And Michael said, you need both to create a good story. And that really resonated with me, because that was something I sometimes struggle a little bit. I do too much of the telling, and that was really very helpful. And I plan to incorporate that into my next books.
Very cool. Very cool. When you're doing your next book and everything, you're saying that you're going to do more showing and having the telling in there too. Do you write in first person, or how do you write?
I write in third person. I tried first person. It's not for me. There are some authors that do it extremely well, and kudos to them, but it's mainly third person omniscient. That's just mostly how I've written, and then so I've just stuck with that third person.
Okay.
Yeah, third person is not a bad thing. I love third. That's what I write it too. I love third person. But yeah, it's great to have you. Yeah, for sure. And Michael, yeah, he's such a good instructor, and yeah, just great that you got to immerse in that. And yeah, definitely glad you got to make it last year. But this year you are actually going to be a panelist. So, yeah, you're definitely going to be taking the next stride to sit on panels and talk shop on writing or fan fiction or you know, genres, YA, sci-fi, all that good stuff. You're going to be making a big debut this summer. So that's kind of cool.
It's cool. It's intimidating and exciting and all of that at once.
What are the dates of that again, Stephen?
This year it is July 8 to 10. 8 to 10. And with the way things are going with the cycles of the pandemic and all, being in midsummer is a, a good place to be, yeah, for sure, as far as the cycle goes. So we anticipate having a really good show and definitely returning to the same venue that everybody loved. And, yeah, it's going to be a lot of fun. But seeing Megan there, yeah, it'll be great because she'll have a book in hand and be doing some panels. And it's going to be definitely an adventure. So and I know Michael will get a kick out of it too. Michael Nost will. Yeah, he'll be there as well. So you definitely got to drop him a note, Megan. Have you told him about your new book being out, by the way?
I have not, no.
Definitely drop him a note because he'll definitely love hearing from you that, you know, your new book is out and everything. And he knows his stuff. But what other events are you planning in 2022? And I know it's crazy with all the, you know, people doing events and canceling events and all this stuff, but have you gotten some other events on the map in addition to Imaginarium or book signings or book events of any kind, or is that something you're kind of exploring right now?
I haven't yet. Honestly, my biggest dream is to hold a book signing at Carmichael's. I just love that store. And I don't think they're doing it. I asked Half Price Books, and they said they're not doing it because of the pandemic. But once that calms down, I might give them a call and say, you know, hey, so I'm a local first-time author. Would you be interested in letting me have a book signing? So we'll see.
Just be careful of how many books they order.
Okay.
Yeah, explain that, Dan.
That's something that me and Stephen went through with Barnes & Noble.
Yeah, what happens is unfortunately because of returnability, bookstores, mm-hmm. because they aren't facing any risk, will over-order. And so you'll go into a bookstore and like Barnes & Noble or something, and if you have returnable status on your books, they'll order a gigantic amount, like 50 copies or something. And, you know, mm-hmm. if you go in as a new author and you sell 10, 15, even 20 copies, that's pretty good. It's a good showing for a first visit to a bookstore or doing a signing or something like that. But what happens is then you're going to get the publisher you're with, like a small press, or yourself, if you're self-publishing, you're going to get hit with 30, 40 returns within a couple of months after doing that signing, and it's a whack. I mean, you do not know that it's just a gut punch seeing that big box of returns because it's financially you get socked. That's always why I say when you work with bookstores, try to work in a consignment arrangement where you provide the copies, or if they're willing to kind of coordinate with you tightly, make sure they do not overorder, that they only get like maybe 20 copies instead of 40 or 50. Because if they do get a large amount, then, you know, it looks impressive when you go to the signing, but it doesn't feel so impressive when you get the bill later.
Thanks for letting me know. That's great. I appreciate that.
I did one Barnes & Noble, and they worked with me and everything, and didn't have very many come back from that one. The next one, I told them, I said, I sold this many books at this one, and just increase it by, a little bit. Well, they increased it mm-hmm. to, 50 copies or something like that.
Yeah.
We sold like,
yep.
You know, and they didn't tell me that, you know, the college was going to be closed at that time and all the students were going to be gone, that I was counting on being there. And, wound up selling like three of them.
Oh,
so,
no.
Yep, and then on my end, on the publishing end, we get this gigantic box of returns, and it's bad, but that's why I'm just saying, a lot of authors when they're getting into it, be careful about that. If you're with a small press or self-publishing like you are, yeah, be careful how you set up your signings. Like a lot, like Half-Price Books is a great one to work with because you bring in your own stock and you sell out of your own stock, and they actually let you keep the, you know, most cases they let you keep the revenue straight up. Really good venue to work with, Half-Price Books.
Wow, okay.
Barnes & Noble, you know, like I said, you just have to coordinate with their, you know, person that's in charge of signings that, you know, they either don't over order or they work with you on some kind of consignment based arrangement where you control the stock. But that's something to keep, yeah, keep in mind as a new author going forward. You definitely, yeah, definitely want to stay out of returns because that's a nightmare.
Okay.
That is the bane of the publishing world.
Barnes & Noble will not let you consignment your books there.
Okay.
They order them and all that stuff. So, and just need to make sure of whatever bookstore that you can actually bring your books and sell your books there.
Okay.
Right. Mm-hmm. But that's something to look forward to. Yeah, that's, well, not look forward to, but something to keep in mind as you go forward. But definitely, yeah, definitely hope that you are able to get some events. Because when you get to meet your readers face to face, it's energizing, and then also it does help you grow when you're actually able to meet people face to face. And
do you have any examples where you've done that?
Yeah, I mean, I've done everything from a book signing in a liquor store to as far as like county street fairs, which are great, by the way. Those are fantastic outlets. County fairs, arts and craft shows, things like that. Some of the things where it's not just books, but you're mm-hmm. one of the handful of authors that are among a lot of different types of vendors. That can be really, really good. Because you know, it's not just a book event. And, of course, you know, it's not saying that this is something that's straight book event's bad, but it definitely – you want those other kind of events in your mix for sure. They're a lot of fun. And if you happen to be –
think outside the box. If you're friends with somebody that has a store, restaurant, liquor store – I've done it in cigar shops because I smoke cigars myself and different things like that, where any type of venue where you think, you know, libraries will let you do it.
Okay.
Where you can come into the library, and a lot of times if you're in a small city, they'll do a write-up on you in the paper for you bringing in your books into the library as something that's happening in that city. You know, different things mm-hmm. like that you can think of that will be advantageous to your career as a author, and, you know, you've got more publicity than just, you know, going to a bookstore and selling sometimes.
Right.
Okay. I'll have to keep that
in
also, mind.
And giving workshops, you know, not something you feel pressure about right out of the gate here, but when you can give, like, you know, talk on writing or something educationally, like with a school or high school or something like that. And, you know, then they let you sell your books at that presentation. Those can be very good too.
That would be really fun.
So tend to sell a lot of books.
Let me sell my book there, Stephen.
Yeah, you're going to have a little more trouble with your genre, Mr. Dark. Yeah, Megan's not going to quite have the same barriers that you will when it comes to high school seminars and workshops. Yeah, Daniel does Jack the Ripper fiction, Megan, so it's a little different. But
all right, that's cool.
Yeah, absolutely, yeah. But, yeah, the high school, yeah, high schools are always a little more guarded. I can't present my Hellscapes short stories at those. I have to mm-hmm. stick to my fantasy and YA dystopian stuff. But yeah, those are good, very useful events though, when you can do kind of combine a presentation of some kind or a workshop of some kind and then be able to sell your books at the end. Those are pretty effective. So Yeah, a lot of opportunity with that, kind of looking around. So, but yeah, the main thing building. What's that, Daniel?
The giving her kudos on her fan fiction. You're in the classification of some really good writers like Tim Wagner, did a fan fiction of a book called Dragonlance. That was actually published as a Dragonlance novel.
Okay.
And, you know, if you know who Tim Wagner is.
I'll have to look him up.
Very prolific writer and everything, very good writer. And I actually had one of his original copies that I didn't even know that's who was writing it until we were sitting there talking one day. And I bought that copy back in the 80s or something like that, or not, early 90s. But, you got some very healthy company that did fan fiction for different books, too.
Well, thank you. I really appreciate that. It's not usually something I'll say to a professional writer, hello, and I've got my start in fan fiction. But, you know, it's not something I want to hide either. So I really appreciate you saying that, Daniel.
Well, I mean, it is a way to get people to recognize you. And, you know, I didn't do it myself, and I don't know whether Steven did or not, but, you know, there's some very talented writers that have done fan fiction, whether they're asked to or not. I know Steven did a fan fiction in a way of steampunk when he was asked to.
Okay.
And he'd never done a steampunk before, so it was a different type of writing for him. But now he's got that on his resume that he's done steampunk too. So
yeah, that was an anthology challenge that was given me by editor Kimberly Richardson, fabulous writer editor, challenged me to write steampunk short stories, and I came up with my Harvey Solomon stories, which are set in a kind of Victorian era, and Harvey is a cat based on my cat Harry, who's no longer with us, unfortunately, and Solomon is his companion, and they go investigate things that go bump in the night in a steampunk setting. So it was a lot of fun, and I ended up doing three original stories in the Harvey Solomon stuff for that and specific anthology series called Dreams of Steam, and that's what he's talking about. But yeah, great stuff, and I'm hoping to actually do a collection where I do about two or three more of those stories, they're standalone, and then get rights. I do have rights back on the three short stories. I can use them now, so I'm thinking about doing actually a collection. So that'd be fun because I love
those stories. That's exciting.
yeah, definitely. And they help me revisit a cat that I absolutely loved in my past. So and present. Let's not overlook that. But Harry was special. So I loved putting him in character.
My main reason for bringing that up, Stephen, was the fact that you did not back away from the challenge. You had never done a steampunk before, but you didn't back away from the challenge. And if you're asked to write something on something like that, it's because people respect the way that you write. They're not asking you just because you're friends or something like that. They're asking you because they respect the way that you write.
Mm-hmm.
So always take up the challenge.
Thank you. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, don't ever hesitate to take on a new genre. Yeah, definitely. You can put a good characters and a good plot into any kind of genre setting. So yeah, don't be afraid. But as we're coming up near the end here, Megan.
At some point. Yep.
That's awesome. We're coming up near the end here, and I want to give you a chance to tell folks where to find you on the internet. So where do you want people to connect with you online to follow the MS Nolan adventure?
Well, they can email me at temporalprotectionagency@gmail.com, And then if they want a signed copy of the paperback, just mention it in the email, and then I can ship it to you for just a very, very low fee for that. And then, of course, the ebook is available on Amazon and on Kindle Unlimited for free. And I have a website, temporalprotectionagency.com. Check that out. And I think that's it.
Fantastic, fantastic. And I told you that now I told you that this hour and a half would blow by, and we've reached the end, and you made it on your debut on Star Chamber Show. Am I right?
It went by so fast. Can I end with a joke?
Yes, you can. Yeah, we're still recording, by the way. Don't worry. No panic, so take your time.
Okay, so this is actually in my book, and I came up with this all by myself. Nobody helped me. So what do you call someone who fixes time machines? A temporal mechanic.
Nice. That's cool. That's cool.
Yeah,
Daniel
Steven actually says that joke.
Yeah, I got it. Oh, Daniel's there. He probably fell off his chair laughing.
I try to put some humor in my stories too. That's always fun.
Yes, and you do absolutely do. And it's a delightful novel. It's rich in character, action. It's got big concepts in it. I love big idea novels. And it's definitely a great kickoff for a series. So yeah, definitely encourage people to buy it, folks. Yeah, print. And that's available on Amazon and Kindle Unlimited. So you can, you know, don't have to be a member of Kindle Unlimited. You can still buy it on Amazon. Yeah, if you have KU, then it's obviously in there for free. So, but yeah, Megan, it's been absolutely fantastic. And it's been an honor having you on the show. And so excited to see that you're underway 12 days into your published author adventure, only 12 days into it. That's awesome. And can't wait to, of course, see you in person, Imaginarium. Hope to see you sooner, maybe at a book event in the spring or something like that. Maybe we can help you with something in Lexington to do a book signing here. But definitely thank you for being on the show. And I will turn it over to you for last comment. And then, Daniel, go ahead and do your thing and take us out after Megan gets done.
I just want to thank you and Daniel for just your very kind and gentle interview with me tonight. It's the first time I've ever done anything like this, so I really appreciate it. I really appreciate you promoting my book, and it's been wonderful. So thank you so much.
You're welcome, Daniel.
And we might have been missing a host, but we didn't miss our time. So you know, we always like to have our host here, but things are understood. We had a great guest tonight. Learned something about her amazing new story that she's put out and how she came about getting there. She's a first-time author and not a last-time author. This is not going to be a one-hit wonder. It's going to be a massive undertaking for this young lady. I ask everybody again to go and download her book and give her a review, because I think that you're going to just love her new book. Until we meet again next week, I hope all of you will be creative. Have a good night. This is Daniel Dark signing out.